I like this little poem. However, the price we pay for not trusting is higher than trusting and feeling betrayed and hurt a few times. Blind trust is not required, but the story that Mal shared demonstrates irreversible trust. What I want to share with that is trusting a Dharma teacher, trusting the Dharma, trusting practice is very scary. Very scary. Trusting a Dharma teacher is very, very, very scary. I understand. I'm speaking from experience. It's scary because we know that this person has the potential to challenge our beliefs and even tell us we're doing some things wrong and even have the audacity to correct us. So trusting a Dharma teacher is very scary because we don't want our belief and value systems to be challenged. And by not wanting them challenged, it might be good, but it can be better. It can be better, it can be even more better. Therefore, not trusting something that is trustworthy, such as the Dharma, we will pay the price of not trusting. There are more disbenefits from not trusting than trusting. We can trust compassion. We can trust forgiveness. We can trust this. We cannot trust anger and deception and miserliness. We cannot trust. Why can we not trust them? Because they have not brought us happiness up till now. But we can trust letting go. We can trust forgiveness. We can trust compassion. We can trust our sadhanas. We can trust our commitments. We can trust our vows. But we cannot trust hatred and irresponsibility and disappointing others. We cannot trust that. Why can we not trust that? Because that has brought us many bad results. Disappointment, pain, hurt, and people going against us. So therefore, if we don't want to trust the Dharma or truth, we will have to pay the price for that. Therefore, I've amended that poem a little bit. The poem says, come to the edge and jump, he said, no. Come to the edge and jump, no. He pushed me and I flew. I want to change that poem. Come to the edge and jump. But if you have a guru, when you come to the edge, you fly. There's a huge difference, but we all have to come to the edge. Come to the edge, and you'll have to jump. And when you jump, you better hope you land in a good place. But when you come to the edge and you have a guru, you will fly. I'll change that poem to what I believe. Therefore, the meaning is to trust. Trust. And the guru here is symbolic. It doesn't mean just the person. It doesn't have to mean the person. It means, as I said in the beginning of this talk, the Dharma that's being conveyed. That we listen with our hearts this past few hours. And in our hearts we know it's correct. Don't be pushed to the edge and have to jump. Now you can fly. How to fly? Forgive. Forgive those that disappoint and lie and tell you wrongly and hurt you and always use you. Forgive them. And always meditate, reflect, and take action in those who have been kind to you. Take action. Never, ever relax when it comes to repaying someone's kindness. And to make it one more step, never, ever relax and kick back if you can make a change in someone's life. Never. Grab every opportunity to make a change in other people's lives without attachment to result. With hope for result, not attachment. The other day I gave a talk, the difference between hope for result and attachment to result. Make a difference. Push yourself. Look for opportunities. Nothing matters when you come to the edge. You either jump or fly. And for many lifetimes now, we've only been jumping. Lucky this time we jumped into the right place. But what happens if we can fly? No more fear. No more fear. Does anyone have any questions? Anyone has any questions? All right. We have finished today. We're going to do a short dedication. And next month, same time, let's do another 5 chapters. Please, everyone, read it a few times. It's very easy reading. There's nothing technical. Take time away and reward yourself. Read it a few times, the next 5 chapters. We'll have questions to help us think deeper. And from what we've read and from questions we may have in the audience, I will explain and elucidate better from what I know. The theme of this book, again, let me remind you, is Guru Devotion. And let me remind you again, inner Guru Devotion, modern Guru Devotion, Guru Devotion with wisdom, not fanaticism, and true Guru Devotion. And true Guru Devotion is divided into 2 sections, as I told you. Read, listen to what these people say. They're sharing their experience. Some of it's painful, some of it's private. They're sharing. Read it. They're just like you and me. And it will help. It will open up. You'll find a friend in these pages. You'll find understanding. In our center, we have the Setra Puja Mondays. Do it well. Do it sincerely. Do it with compassion. Do it from compassion. Do it for compassion. We have the Miktamas, and we need to finish it. If we finish it, it will open up many more avenues in our center to benefit other beings. Pujas are not meant to give us work. They're meant to lessen work. They're meant to avoid things that might happen. They are meant to purify things before they happen. And they are meant to save us time and effort. That's why we do pujas. So the Miktama 10 million pujas is to save us time and energy and work individually and as a whole. Attend. Make a commitment. A few hours a week will not do any damage to your lifestyle. Attend. Attend the talk. Do the talk well. I've explained, I've taken so much effort by SMS and spent thousands of dollars by SMS to explain people. Talk is very important. It is the most supreme practice. In talk, we completely visualize the path from A to Z. We completely review the path from A to Z. And every preliminary practice and medium practice, medium silk and highest level practice is all embodied within talk within the Lama Chöpa. It is even done every 2 weeks by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. It is so supreme. It is done every 2 weeks in Ganden, Sera, Drepung, Tashi Longpo, Amdo Tashi Kiel. It is done in Gyudo and Gyume Tantric Colleges. It is done by all traditions of Buddhism, from the holy traditions of Nyingma, Sakya, Kagyu. And it is given to us by our gurus. It is sacred. It is a ceremony in which outwardly it looks like different rituals and chanting and prayers and practices, but it's internal. He gives us a chance, according to the seven limbs, to purify our karma and to collect a vast amount of merit so that when we do meditational retreats, they gain results. No practice and no commitment can be more supreme than holding our tantra commitments, of which one is so. No practice can be more supreme than holding tantra commitments, and of which one is the Tsok. The greatest masters in Tibet, now the past, who are in their 60s and 70s and 80s, all do Tsok every 2 weeks and attend Tsok and do their practices. All of them is a shining example to us. If we find out that anyone's doing Tsok, any tradition, any practice, any Yidam, we should immediately encourage them, provide a place, provide a space, and provide the foundation for them to do it. Why? So they come to our center? No. So that their commitments don't degenerate due to the fact that they're alone, without their gurus, without a sangha, without guide, without people to teach and help them. And blown here and there, like a candle in the wind, just blown. So our center should provide a platform for all practitioners without any conditions. But we do have Tsok rules because, just like in Ganden, Sarah Drepung, there are rules for Tsok. Why? The rules are not there to punish us, but it's there to help us keep discipline. Malaysia is a beautiful, law-abiding, peaceful country. Why? Because the citizens here follow the rules. That is why. So like that, in every sphere of life, we have rules. The rules are not meant to harm us or put us down. They're meant to help us. And rules made by the Buddha or Lord Vajradhara is definitely meant to benefit us. Keep your tantric commitments. Everybody out there, everybody here, everybody everywhere, keep your tantric commitments. Don't let tantra degenerate in the world. Tantra will be more and more efficient and more powerful and more beneficial for beings of this time because it offers a path to transform the emotions and passions instead of suppressing them. It offers a method to transform the passions and emotions, not suppress them. Therefore, the tantras will be much more efficacious for people of this time. Every tantric system is valid and complete. And every lama has a valid and complete lineage of tantric practices that have benefited many beings for hundreds of years. And no one can say which one is better or worse. But in our center, we will focus on the great master, tricosmic master, Vajrayogini, the mother of all Buddhas. And that will be our eventual practice. And a few days ago, I gave a more extensive touching on secret aspects of Vajrayogini's body, speech, and mind and practices according to death, bardo, and rebirth, and according to the three bodies of a Buddha. I gave a more extensive teaching, not complete, the other day. In any case, my point is, right now we're studying a sutra. Our motivation is making it Mahayana, but our practice will be Tantra. So in that way, our center is a Tri-Yana center. Tri-path. Tri meaning we practice Hinayana, we practice Mahayana, we practice Tantrayana. With no offense to anyone, with respect to all religions and all faiths, with complete respect to them. Why? That is spiritual practice. Respect is the core of spiritual practice. Respect is to allow and to forgive and let them do. Forgive those who harm, let them do what they're doing in the means of whatever practices help their mind, let them. So in our center, we're a Tri-Yana center. That's been my wish for many years. We practice all traditions combined into one path. So our goal on the outside is to practice Lama Tsongkhapa's incredible holy guru yoga to control, transform, and change our immediate emotions of emptiness, loneliness, depression, and sadness. And to overcome that, because to do the higher practices, we have to get rid of some obstacles and stones along the way. Then, when we practice Lama Tsongkhapa very well and we've taken the outer obstacles and problems, and Tsongkhapa is excellent because it also stabilizes our wealth, increase our merits, that the necessities we need for practice will come and make it easier. Calm our inner mind, calm our passions and angers, calm doesn't mean go away. It means make them not harmful anymore. Transform them and settle them down. And then we'll be ready for the path of Vajrayogini. What's the difference between Tsongkhapa and Vajrayogini? No difference. From the side of the Buddha, there's no difference. From the side of the presentation of the path, there's a difference. In Lama Tsongkhapa's path, it doesn't go all the way with generation and completion stage meditations, which help us to transform our reality and perspectives. It is more a preparatory practice. From the side of Vajrayogini, you have to have finished the preparatory practices in order to engage in Vajrayogini's practice. According to Kyaji Sorumchi and the great Mahasiddha Geshe Tsudam Gyaltsen, in this time and age, it's very difficult to go systematically here, here, here. Why? In a Dharma center, you're not teaching monks. You're not teaching nuns. You're not teaching yogis. You're teaching normal lay people who drift in, who drift out, who go to this center, who go to this place, go to this tradition, go here, go there, go there. Their minds are unsettled. They get confused. And their commitments are not strong. Their practice is not strong. They hold no vows. And they have a lot of attachments, and they have a lot of obstacles, and they have a lot of distractions. So it's very, very hard. Traditional, these teachings are not taught to ordinary people who are not practiced. And even within the monastery, it's not given to all monks. So therefore, there's a new challenge for teaching the tantras to people. The new challenge is to teach a set of people who actually are not ready for tantra, but need it very badly. So therefore, now the structure is to do sutra, which is practice, preliminary practice, combined with actual tantric practice. So people that are with me, that is my goal. Whether they're my students or not, it doesn't really matter. If you're my student, you deserve Buddhahood. If you're not, you don't. I don't think like that. I provide a practice and a foundation and a platform for people. Free, easy, open. Why? A, you're just like me. Nobody wants to suffer. B, I'm not interested in Tibetan lamas in the future in the sense of only they can teach. Of course, Tibetan lamas are great teachers currently. But in the future, we need to create international local teachers from every country who teach their own people. That is much more important. Just like at one time, the Tibetans all learned from the great Indian masters. But then when the Buddhism shifted over to Tibet, the Tibetans taught themselves, the Chinese taught themselves, etc., etc., etc. Now we see beautiful people from all over the world teaching their own people. That's very important. And that's what we need to create and develop. It's not a monopoly. Definitely not. It's open. So in our center, I am very, very, very gung-ho about doing preliminary practice, holding our vows, doing occasional retreats, and more for our people to not the devotional side or the ritual side of practice. I'm more interested in our people to do practical side, such as running the center, running the outlets. You all know what's the purpose of the outlets and why I asked you to volunteer. And we've received very wonderful responses from people who came to volunteer. And to take care of hospitals, to take care of the Sangha, to take care of the homeless. In the future, I very much wish to be blessed to have a soup kitchen, non-denominational, to give food to people who don't have food. As I told you, I was there. I experienced hunger living on the streets. I know what it feels like. And I am glad today I did. I wasn't that time, but I'm glad I did today. And therefore, our center will be that one of action. Everybody has a gift. Whether it's to be in Sarasati department, to make pearls, to do it with love, to do it with commitment, and to do it with samaya, and to do it finishing. Or painting statues, to do it with love and dedication and good motivation completely. Or to be in the KMP department, to write with love, to produce with love, to produce. What's love? What's love? Meaning compassion for others, that this will benefit them. To benefit others. Can we directly benefit them? Can we directly teach them? Not at this time. Can we directly show them our attainments? Not at this time. Can we directly show them that we've controlled our mind? Directly at this time? No. Can we control weathers? Can we stop ghosts? At this time, we cannot. But through KMP departments, such as producing books and VCDs and CDs very well and nicely, it will benefit many people who are not able to go near the Dharma. Time, schedule, whatever. Through the outlets, who people normally would not go to a Dharma center or know about it or hear about it or have prejudices about it. So when we work in an outlet and we're there, it will make an impact. What kind of people we need at the outlet? All types of people. We will attract what we are in the outlet. That's why we need all types of people to volunteer in the outlet. Then we need people to volunteer. We need people to volunteer in the Dharma centers. Car, is it? We need people to volunteer in the Dharma centers. Why do we need people to volunteer in the Dharma center? Because our Dharma center is expanding by double now. We require two new buildings, two floors. It's expanding. We have a Buddha Oasis room. We have a Zambala chapel. We're opening up another Dharma outlet branch there. We're going to have a Dharma hostel there, which means people can rent rooms and stay there. We're expanding. So we need people to do that. Why do we need people to take care of that and volunteer and do it from their heart? Because it will benefit many more people. Do work at KH out of love. Work in the outlets out of love. Attend book class out of love. Do your practice and sadhanas every day out of love. Work together well out of love. What kind of love? To bring benefit to others. So if we can't do it directly, we can do it indirectly, via our center. To take time away, to be committed. We can do it right here. Why not? And why should we do it for the Malaysians? Why should we do it in Malaysia? Because we're here right now. It doesn't matter the people we help are Malaysians or Europeans or whatever. It doesn't matter because sentient being is sentient being. But the karma or the merit we receive from helping will be the same. Quick, you go. So the merit we receive will be the same. And with this merit we dedicate it back, we're able to help more and more and more people. Don't just wish and pray. Doing. Don't wait. There's no better opportunity, as Tamara has said. Don't wait. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait for conditions to happen. Conditions don't happen. Right now is the perfect time, no matter how difficult it is. And when you do Dharma work, inevitably, remember this, you will come across monsters and weirdos and all kinds of strange people and disappointments and all types of anger and arguments. You will. Why? People are people. But at least this time when you're angry or pissed off or overworked or burned out or tired or exhausted, it's for a higher cause. It's not just for a paycheck. It's not just for money. It is for benefiting others. So when you're tired for the Dharma, you should be happy. When you're pissed off for the Dharma, you should be happy. When you're burned out for the Dharma, you should be happy. When you meet monsters for the sake of Dharma, you should be happy. When you meet bloodsuckers and parasites for the Dharma, you should be happy. Why? Because we're going to meet them anyway. We're going to meet these people anyway, or these kind of beings anyways. There's no way to avoid them. There's nowhere on this planet where we don't meet scary, nasty, horrible experiences. But let the end result be different. Therefore, don't, when you're in Dharma, don't say, oh, I want to quit. Oh, I can't handle it. Or the people are nasty. Why are Dharma and people nasty? Why are people in Dharma nasty? Because that's why they're in Dharma. It's like going to a hospital and saying, why is everybody sick? Why is everybody sick? Why are there people in the hospital dying? Why are there dead people in the hospital? Why is there a morgue? So then why do you go to Dharma center? Why ask there are neurotic people? Strange people? People who you tell them not to park and block the neighbors so they don't disrupt our teaching, they still don't listen. Why? Why? Why are they weirdos in the center? Why are there people who are stubborn and don't change? Why are there people in the center who are in the center to use other people for money, for business? Why? There are people in the center who come to center. They're not here to practice. They're here to look good so they can get financial help from you or some business or something. Why? But why ask that? There are people like that everywhere in the world. It's how you deal with it. At least there are nice people, and there are people focused, and there are people who have direction, and the direction is to bring spiritual relief for others that you can't obtain anywhere else. So at least for the Dharma, when you suffer, if your perspective is wrong, you're suffering for the Dharma. If your perspective is correct, you're absorbing the burdens of others and giving them your happiness. So if you have the right perspective for Dharma, you absorb other people's sufferings and you give them your happiness. Isn't that what Buddha quality and Christ quality is about? What did Jesus say when he was slapped and beaten, humiliated, and he was called a liar, and he was tortured, and they made him carry his own cross, and then after carrying his own, they whipped him even more, put thorns on him, humiliated him by giving him a red cloak, calling him a king, king of the Jews. And then when they put him on, when they crucified him, and they erected the crucifix, there was even two people on the left and right. One was asking him for refuge. The other one was putting him down. Even when he's dying, there's a person there putting him down. And what did he say? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And that's why Christianity grew to benefit so many people in the world for over two millenniums now, because of this statement Lord Jesus made, compassion. So if we want to be Christ-like or Buddha-like, if we want to find Buddha or find God, we can start right now by suffering for others, by absorbing for others. How do we start? With the very people we live in that get on our nerves. Quiet. Don't fight. Don't react back. Don't shout back and say back what we want to say to them. In pujas, in teachings, at home, here, there, don't shout at people. Don't tell them off. Don't say anything that comes from anger. Don't cover it by saying you're being compassionate. Don't say anything from anger again if you want to be a Buddha. Don't say anything from anger. Don't do anything from anger. You want to know spiritual practice? You want to know how to start? I'm telling you right now. Don't say and do anything from anger. It is very hard. It's easier to do some mantras. It's easier to make some offerings. It's easier to do some prostrations. But it's not easy to do something. So stop doing something from anger. Start right there. That's spiritual practice. That's guru devotion. That's Buddhahood. That's finding God. That's tapping into your real nature. Are these words beautiful? Do they touch you? Let it touch you when you leave this room. Let it pervade your life when you leave this room. Don't wait for your guru to criticize you or tell you good and bad. You be your own guru. If you don't want your guru to tell you what to do, you tell yourself what to do, and you tell yourself the right way. Live your life not ashamed anymore. Live your life not embarrassed anymore. Live your life not fighting for attention and fighting for ego and to be right. Live your life to absorb other people's difficulties and give back your happiness. And to develop courage from that. And the courage will grow. And so if you're able to help one person, it will become 10, 100, 100, 200, 300, 1,000, 100,000. It will increase. You will build that kind of energy base, energy nucleus. Why? It starts with just one thought. So when you suffer for the Dharma, when you're tired for the Dharma, when you're exhausted for the Dharma, what is Dharma? Buddhism? No, no, no. No. Suffer for the Dharma means to be happy, to put other people in a state of happiness, and to absorb the difficulties that come along the way. That if they want the better room, you give it to them. That if you have one set of food, you give them half or all. That if you're tired, you push yourself to do something for them because they need it. And to take responsibility. Start now. Right this moment. That's what commitments is all about. That's what keeping tantra commitments is all about. It is about taking responsibility for ourselves, others, and keeping our guru devotion. Do you think just because we don't see our gurus often and we see other gurus, then we can change instructions? The instructions I received from Sarangji was over 20 years ago. I still do the practices I promised him, although I don't see his previous incarnation again. He died. I'm not going to go to another guru and then change my practice around, change this, meditate, change that, change this, and then what my guru has already told me and I promised. Why? Because I cannot go back to my guru and say, sorry, I can't do it. Can I be excused? He's dead. But a new guru, I can say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't. I already have a previous practice. I'm not going to switch my practice around because there's a more glamorous guru or glamorous teacher or glamorous center or glamorous whatever. I'm going to stick to what I'm doing because that's what I promised my guru. That's called responsibility and commitment. That's why in my center, in our center in KH, I am very strong in upholding other people's traditions and their practices and what they have received, and I don't switch it around. I enhance it and I add to it. Why? Whose path is more valid? Definitely not mine. Definitely not. Responsibility is important. Keeping our commitments is important. Keeping our samaya is important. Most important, the reason and the result for keeping our samaya, keeping our practice, keeping our commitments is important. The reason is that we can gain the strength and the courage and the merit to take on more from others and give more happiness in return. If we do that, we will achieve great happiness. And the burdens we absorb will be burdens that will become easier and easier. Pretty soon you can take hundreds and hundreds of people's burdens and it'll be of no problem. Why? You've trained your mind. Right now, even taking another person's burden, one person might be difficult. But it's possible. Just as it says in the Lama Chöpa, Buddhas work solely for the welfare of others while infantile beings work solely for themselves. See the virtues of one and the disbenefits of the other. How can we become a Christ or a Buddha if we don't absorb other people's difficulties? How do you absorb? By doing your practice when you find yourself tired. By keeping your commitments when there's distractions. By making yourself study when there's other things that you could do that can just make you relax. By challenging your anger, by remembering the kindness of others, by being responsible, that's how you take on the sufferings of others. Why? By doing that, you will achieve Buddhahood. Before Buddhahood, you will achieve emotional freedom. You will achieve emotional freedom. You will sense peace and happiness, and things will not disturb you at all, I promise. Things will not disturb you. Things that ordinarily disturb you will not. What's the difference in that? You don't suffer. You don't make other people suffer. And then you can share this with others. That's what taking suffering means. Doesn't mean when someone's getting beaten, you stand there and ask them to beat you instead. If someone's in jail and you haven't done anything and you can be more beneficial out of jail, you say, I'll go to jail for them instead. That's not compassion. That's silliness. Taking on the sufferings of others means emotional responsibility. Right now, sitting here listening, taking notes and saying, I'm going to practice this, is taking on responsibility, absorbing the sufferings of others. Why are you here? So that you can benefit others. By benefiting yourself. This is taking on sufferings for others. It's time. It's time. It's time to take on sufferings of others without recognition. It's time to burden yourselves for others without recognition. Because in unburdening yourself, you will not feel burdened anymore. Because you build up that mental strength and courage. We all need this. What I'm speaking to you has nothing to do with religion almost. It has to do with our human existence. That's the beauty of Buddha's teachings. We're talking about our human existence. And I'm not just telling you, be nice, be nice, be nice. I'm giving you a method. I'm telling you why. I'm telling you the cause. I'm telling you the result. I'm giving you the whole spectrum. It isn't just, be nice. I'm on a pulpit holding my Lam Rim book and waving the Buddha at you. You got to be nice or you're going to go to the 18 lower hells. You got to be nice or you're going to be a pig on a farm again. You got to listen to the good book. If you don't listen to the good book, you will be damned. We don't need a good book or no good book to be damned. We're already damning ourselves by not being nice. It's not about that. I love those Southern Baptist ministers, you know, those televangelists. I always thought I can be one of them. Couldn't you see me as a televangelist? Oh, I can ham it up. And I can get myself a wife that wears a lot of makeup too. Call her Tem Faye Baker. Anybody knows Tammy Faye? That's right. Some of you will know. I can be a great Southern Baptist minister. I can even fake a Southern accent. I'm from the U.S. Can you imagine a Tibetan Lama with a Southern accent talking about the book? And you guys all can send in $15 to help my ministry. Oh, I can. One of these days I'll do my Southern televangelist impersonation because it's a little late, so I don't want you guys to get excited and you can't sleep. If we take on the sufferings of others by being responsible, by keeping our commitments, by holding our vows, by developing a mind that gains courage and strength, that's how we take on the sufferings of others. If we do that, contrary to being afraid of getting more sufferings, you will be free from sufferings. You will be free. Contrary. Some people think, oh God, I've got enough problems. I've got enough issues. I've got enough emotional ups and downs. I don't want more problems. My life is fabulous. I don't need more problems. Some people say, take on the problems of others. No, I can't. They're scared. Why? Because they don't understand the real nature of taking on the sufferings of others. They don't understand the real result. They're not stupid. They're ignorant. That's why we attend Dharma teachings. When we absorb the sufferings of others and the problems of others, we become people like Mother Teresa. Do you think she suffered? Do you think Mother Teresa suffered? She lived in suffering. Suffering was around her. Do you think she suffered? Do you think that lady suffered? No. Because she chose to take on the sufferings of everyone, she never suffered a day. Even to this day, her blessings are very strong in the world. When we talk about her, what do we identify? How do we feel? Is it about Christianity and Buddhism? No. It's about her going back to her real self, taking on the sufferings of others and helping others. Just the name is Buddha, a God, and Christ. In our case, it's Buddha and Karma. Just the name. Why argue about that? Why? Absorb and take on the sufferings of others and difficulties of others by being responsible, by transforming your mind, by keeping your commitments, by being true to your guru, by doing your practice. And you'll see your mind grow. You'll see courage grow. You'll see disappointments become less. And I promise you, taking on the burdens of others, you will not feel burdened. You will not. On the contrary, you will feel very happy. Right now, not taking on the burdens of others, not taking on the responsibilities of others, just taking yourself and not even taking your own responsibilities, how much fear it creates. How much unhappiness do we experience? How much disappointment do we create? How much pain do we create to others? By not even taking care of our own responsibilities. But when we take care, if we look around us to people who take care of the responsibility, become better, how much happiness they bring to people around them? How much inspiration do we create to other people? When we look at someone who takes responsibility, how much they inspire us and they get our respect, and how much they benefit? So therefore, if we don't take responsibility even for ourselves, how much problems do we make for people around us? Each time people say something to us and no one's watching, we don't do our work. When they're watching, we do our work. How much suffering does that create for others and ourselves? How much suffering? Very simple. Don't think any deeper. Suspicion, disrespect, and people lose confidence in us. How much? When we have to be told what to do. When we watch, we do it. When we don't watch, we don't do. How much? When we promise a timeline or a deadline, or we promise some commitment, we promise some whatever to people, and we don't do it, how much doubt and unhappiness does it create in other people's minds? We created that. If they yell at us and we shout back and we become their enemy, we tell people they're angry, we did that. It's not them. We did that. Is that spiritual? Not keeping your promise and timelines and what you committed to is not spiritual. Why? You're making people unhappy. Very simple. And then you're praying and chanting and having altars and say you're in the Dharma? So if we take our own responsibility, we already make ourselves and people around us happier. You know why? Less fear. Less fear of being caught. Less fear of being 저단당, less fear of being scolded, less fear of criticism, less fear of being discovered and found out. Already we feel happy. We're more relaxed. We don't have to defend and protect. And then if we take responsibility for other people, the feeling we have for taking it for ourselves will increase even more. Contrary to having fear of taking other people's sufferings, and therefore we suffer more, that is a mind who doesn't understand the nature of sufferings and its antidote. That mind will be afraid of taking on other people's sufferings and having courage. Why? That mind doesn't understand the real nature, cause, and antidote to hardship and suffering. Very simple. Do you think truly enlightened and spiritual people suffer? They don't. Never mind high lamas like Dalai Lama and Mother Teresa. Never mind those high lamas like them. Even if we look at a wonderful country woman in the villages in our own countries where we see a wonderful, hearty country woman who's giving, who shares her milk with other people, who shares her bread, who's very open with her farm, who's easy, who's accepting, who's kind. Everybody flocks to this person. Everybody goes to this wonderful country woman who's not even educated, but her kindness and her love and her openness and her ability to take responsibility challenges our fears and inspires us to transform. Buddhism is a beautiful method for developing courage, taking responsibility, pushing ourselves to do more for others, and to realize there is no fear in that. Don't be afraid to do more. Don't be afraid. There is no fear to do more. If you understand the nature of the mind, its causes and antidotes, and that's what we're learning. Accept other people's difficulties. Give over your happiness. Start with your commitments and practice. And study. Start with that. Start with the very people that we live with and the very people we work with. To be responsible, to be open, to be generous, to do what we're supposed to do without being told and reminded. Start our Dharma practice with the very people we live with and the very people we work with. To be open and generous, to take responsibility, to not be reminded and pushed for what we're supposed to do. Start now. Start your practice this moment. Start immediately. And when you slip, push yourself. Start now. That is your yidam. That is your mantra. Don't wait for things to go wrong. Things will go wrong. Do you know samsara? Everything for everybody else all around goes wrong. Why won't it go wrong for yourself? It will go wrong. It's a natural state of existence. Up and down, up and down. Don't wait for down. You're up now. You're really up now. Start your Dharma practice now. Take responsibility. Do your work. Do what you're supposed to do. Start now so that you don't burden anyone else. That's all. Janju. Tony. Gyawan. Lama Sange Jigune Joa Jige Malu Pa De Sala Go Bara Sho Chuji Jabu. Jeva Soni Lade Ne Jeva Lo San Jaba Yi Denpa yurin banju ji gangri rewe. Korwe shingante.
Chenese Wang Denzin Gyatso Yi, Chavez Sidu Pandu Tinju Ji.
Thank you all very much. I've enjoyed myself tremendously to be reminded of my practice, to read over what I need to do for myself, and to be able to check what I've been doing and what I've neglected. I'm very happy. And for some of you who've heard this the first time, or for some of you who've heard it before, I'm very happy to share again. And again, I thank the people who have taken care of Dao Mekong, prepared the place, cleaned, organized it, turned on the lights, paid the bills, for all this to happen. You're good people, manifested through practice. And next month, I'll see you for the next 5 chapters. Please read it well. Don't think, oh, it's so little. I can read it on the last day. Don't take it as a reading. It's very beautiful. What these people write is pure Dharma. And their experiences are pure Dharma. And their transformations is pure Dharma. And they're just like you and me. It will be very helpful. It's a very beautiful book. I'm very moved by it. It's a wonderful book. And all of you have been very focused, alert, and awake, and listening. That shows you the result of taking responsibility for your body, to push yourself. That's taking responsibility. Again, let me remind you, the purpose of our teachings and gathering here is to challenge, encourage, push, and support each other to reach our potential. That's the purpose of these classes here. I'm happy to see all of you. Not because you're listening to my talk. You're here because you want to make things even better. And that's very happy. That's a good reason to get together. It's better than many reasons we've gotten together with people in the past. That's a very good reason to get together, that we want to do something of benefit to others. Remember, inverted commas. Suffer and take on burden for the Dharma. Inverted commas, suffer. Actually, he's not suffering. Do it happily. Don't complain. By complaining, we encourage our negative, neurotic mind to have a chance to surface again. Be happy. Be energetic. Be happy to suffer. I'm not trying to be poetic. Be happy to suffer. It's possible. Our own mothers have suffered for us so much for many years while we were in her womb. By reflecting on the kindness of the mother, according to Shantideva, we realize there is compassion in the world. If there is compassion of that of a mother for her child, then there's definitely the compassion of a Buddha. It's all connected because there are different stages. Definitely the compassion of a Buddha for all of us is much greater than the compassion of a mother for a child. But the mother's compassion for a child is greater than the compassion we have at this point. One step leads to another. So if a compassion of a mother for her child is real and tangible, compassion is tangible. If compassion is tangible, there should be no limit to compassion. If there's no limit to compassion, definitely there must be existing Buddhas with much greater compassion than what we have that's achievable. Very logical. Very clear. Don't think it's some faraway, distant, exotic word or wish. It can be achieved. It must be achieved. It is a natural evolution for us to achieve compassion. It is a natural evolution. Why? We're secure, comfortable, happy, and at peace when we're compassionate. It's very natural. It's very natural to be compassionate. Very natural. The essence of today's teachings, again, is guru devotion, finding the inner guru. The essence of today's teaching is how to find one's inner guru and the two methods that I explained to you all. And the application of those two methods will lead to higher thoughts, more courage, and attainments. And when we engage in a tantric practices that expedite, it's like taking an airplane to a location as opposed to a train, then tantric results will come. Do not think there are people without tantric results. There are people living today, walking and among us today, who definitely have tantric results. Definitely. So therefore, be happy to suffer, starting with the people around us and starting with the people we work with. Be happy. Be very happy. You can pick the unhappy suffering or happy suffering. If you're happy suffering, the suffering will change. It will not be suffering anymore. You make a pick. How wonderful it is for us to get together and to have an aspiration to make things better. That's why we're feeling happy. We're not feeling happy because the speaker spoke well. We're feeling happy is because the speaker has reminded us of something that's inside of all of us. And when we tap into it, we feel very happy. That's why we feel happy at this time. So before it becomes too late and you become unhappy, I will say goodnight.